Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Suzlon Energy Limited Q1 FY25 earnings conference call hosted by ICICI Securities. During this call, the company management may make certain statements which reflect their outlook for the future or which could be construed as forward-looking statements. These statements are based on the management's current expectations and are associated with uncertainties and risks as fully detailed in the annual report, which may cause the actual result to differ. Hence, these statements must be reviewed in conjunction with the risk that the company faces. As a reminder, all participants' lines will be in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing the star and zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Mohit Kumar from ICICI Securities. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Deepika. Good evening. On behalf of ICICI Securities Limited, I would like to welcome you all for the Q1 FY25 conference call of Suzlon Energy Limited. From the management, we have with us Mr. J.P. Chalasani, Group CEO, Mr. Himanshu Mody, Group CFO. We'll begin with opening remarks followed by a Q&A session. To be fair to others, request each participant to ask not more than two or three questions. Over to you, sir. Thank you.
Earnings call. I hope you had an opportunity to review our results and investor presentation. We will now share with you an overview of the industry, and we will walk you through our Q1 FY25 performance. We will then take your questions. Q1 FY25 continues the growth momentum started in FY24 with unparalleled performance across financial and operational parameters. This is one of the best quarters in seven years, wherein we have outperformed across various performance parameters. This performance comes as a result of several strategic and transformative steps the company took in the last three to four years, which we have been briefing from time to time. Robust, largest-ever order book in the history of Suzlon of 3.8 GW as of June 24 is a testament of superior technology, acceptability of our S144WTG model, and customer confidence in Suzlon. This also reverberates with 29 years of proven track record with 32% market share on cumulative installed base in India. Suzlon also qualifies for government tenders post and would be selectively pursuing these orders, as we mentioned, as we discussed during our last call. Our endeavor remains to pursue quality orders with higher value and better margins. Globally, India ranks fourth in total wind installations with 46 GW of installed onshore wind as of June 2024. Suzlon continues its growth trajectory with deliveries of 274 MW in Q1 FY25, which is two times of 135 MW in Q1 FY24. This quarter, industry did close to 770 MW of commissioning, which is obviously below the expectations. As per our estimates, there are a sizable number of turbines in pre-commissioning phase, which could not be commissioned for different reasons and would be commissioned in Q2 FY25. Indian wind sector, as per our estimates, should achieve installation of 5 GW in FY25. Our OMS business continues to do well with 14.8 GW capacity in India, with the machine availability ensured above 96%. Our top priority would remain timely execution of our robust order book while upholding the highest standards of quality and ESG. Our pioneering business model of end-to-end offerings for wind energy value chain, fully integrated supply chain, track record of project execution, and best-in-class service cannot be easily replicated, which provides us with a strong, differentiated competitive advantage. I would now like to invite Himanshu to take you through our financial performance.
Thank you, J.P. sir, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I shall be using slide number 16 to 23 of our investor presentation, which is now available on our website, as the reference point for our discussion during this call. Q1 FY25 has seen us register robust improvement in all key performance parameters, and our fundamentals have further strengthened with a focus on the bottom line. We have made deliveries of 274 megawatts in Q1, which is more than 2x as compared to Q1 of FY24. On the P&L front, Q1 FY25, there has been a renewed focus on our bottom line, which has resulted in a revenue of 2016 crores in the quarter, witnessing an increase of 50% on a year-on-year basis. Consolidated EBITDA of the company stood at 370 crores, which is up by more than 86%, and with an EBITDA margin of 18.4% on a consolidated basis. PAT for Q1 FY25 increased by 200% or almost 3x to about 302 crores in the quarter. This has made us register highest quarterly EBITDA and PAT in almost about 7 years. We are also pleased to report that our balance sheet as of June 2024 demonstrates a further position of strength with a consolidated strong net worth of 4,253 crores and a net cash position of 1,197 crores. The last 1 year in FY24 has been a year of financial turnaround for us, whereas we focused on our balance sheet and also putting in place the working capital for the company. We would like to reiterate that Suzlon is well positioned for the growth and sectoral leadership to participate in the India energy transition, with FY25 being a focus of performance on the P&L side and working capital side in the company. Needless to say, we shall be focused on best-in-class product with our in-house R&D team. Our fortified financial position with optimized cost structure shall continue and be a focus area for us. Largest ever order book, as JPC sir just mentioned, with a strong pipeline in active discussion. A supply chain that's fully geared up in line with our order book commitments to our customers, and a regained confidence of all stakeholders, including financial and also suppliers and customers, and a strong bench strength with the management team that has a renewed zeal to deliver. With that, I'd like to conclude my presentation, and we can open the floor for any question and answers that the callers may have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touch tone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Sumit Kishore from Axis Capital. Please go ahead, sir.
Good evening. My compliments on a robust Q1 performance. My first question is, could you spell out the reasons for improvement in the WTG contribution margin in Q1? We've also noted that your project or segment mix has shifted more in favor of captive C&I retail, even on a sequential basis, now almost two-thirds. Is the pricing better in this segment versus state or central bids? That would be my first question.
So, Sumit, hi. On the margin, of course, whilst we've reported close to 23% contribution margin on the WTG segment, it is not something that may be sustainable because this quarter saw a lower activity on the project execution side. So whilst, from a readiness perspective, we had about 230 megawatts of turbines ready on the ground for commissioning, but we did only 70 so far because the balance 160 megawatts lies in the scope of our customers, which is out of our hand. Had that kicked in, there may have been certain delta revenue and cost which may have pulled down the margin a bit. But having said that, needless to say, still the margins would have been in the late teens or maybe around the 20% vicinity. So that's the answer to your first question. On the second one, the mix of course is what it is between CNI and IPP, but in terms of our average selling price to the both class of customers, it is pretty similar. There is no visible differentiation in pricing across customer class.
Got it. And my second and last question is, for S144, how many WPG sets have been delivered or installed so far? So if you could give your experience of how that particular turbine is operating on the field and any other experiences in terms of commissioning this.
So we commissioned close to about 100 megawatts as of now. So the everything is in line or better than what anticipated in terms of our design parameters. And in fact, we're also now going to the high wind season, so to establish for the start. We have not seen, everything has been smooth, touch wood, and better than what was expected in terms of the design power curve.
Okay, thank you and wish you all the best.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Amit Pinde from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, sir. So I had two questions. One, with your plan to change the timing of your merger, so is the qualification to NTPC getting affected because of that? And second thing that I wanted to ask on similar lines is that you have made a framework agreement with CESC. So if you can give some details on that one, that's my first question.
On the NTPC, we did discuss last time. So we said that we qualify and we participated in their bid, a large bid, and we're waiting for the results. And we will continue to participate in other public sectors as well. So we have no restriction
right, so
today to participate.
Without this merger, merger procedure happening, still you are eligible for NTPC. Right. Okay, great. And on the
this is a framework agreement which was announced by the CSE. As far as we are concerned, as and when some of them get rectified into a definitive agreement, as per our policy with confirmed advance, we will keep announcing.
Any indication on the size of the framework agreement that you can?
Any framework agreement is substantial quantum. So therefore, let's leave it there. But as far as we are concerned, we are not considered that in our order book.
Right.
And we only consider in an order book as and when each segment of the framework gets converted into a firm contract with an advance.
Right.
So therefore, this is not part of our 3.8 gigawatts what order book we have announced today.
Got it, sir. So, and the other question that I had was, if you can help us understand how your deliveries would shape up, because now captive and IPPs are increasing more than the bids. So then would the delivery timelines be faster and can we expect a ramp up in the near next 2-3 quarters?
Second portion I can't say, that looks like a guidance but the deliveries would depend upon whether it is an IPP or it's C&A, anyone on this, is with respect to the readiness of site. Okay. Like, remember last time we discussed that the reason why as a country we are not able to move forward much quicker is the execution challenges on the ground. And as Himanshu expected some time back, in fact, our capacity, commission capacity would have been 230, not 70. So, but the balance 160, we could not connect to the grid. While the turbine is pre-commissioned, everything is ready, either because the client's connectivity is not there or client's BOP in terms of aggregate system, things are not ready. So if we add the 160 to 770 of countries, then country outflow would have been around 930. And our share would have been at 25%, which is what normally we've been maintaining.
Right.
So it all depends. It's nothing to do with the site. Like, for example, NTPC awards the BOP contracts in advance. Okay. Then after a time gap, they award for the turbines, like what we participated now for those projects, BOP is already awarded by them. So therefore, expectation is that in that case, the preparation is much better. The supplies would be much quicker.
Right.
So it depends upon each quarter what mix of projects are scheduled. Based on that, is the acceleration happens. If the supply is not an issue, once again, I'm underlining supply is not an issue. Issue would be the readiness of the projects to update.
Readiness of the projects. Right. So on this one, so your realization of revenue for the bit of the installation part would still be left unrecognized, right? It. So that would get recognized when the installation happens for this 160 megawatt.
Yes, that's correct.
Right?
That's correct.
Okay. Right. And the last part that I want to understand is the penalty that notice that was you had put out a press release three, four days ago of 20 million. So that one, would we recognize that in our income statement in this year as a cost or in this quarter? Or would you be recognizing it after contesting?
No. We'll only recognize it only once as and when it fructifies. You know, right now it is, you can say at best it's a contingent liability, but it is not fructified. We'll, of course, whilst we've received those notices at our end, we'll be, as a company, defending the notices, and only as and when it is paid or fructified is when it will go through the P&L.
Right, got it. So currently no provisioning or anything would not be made for that 20 crore rupees?
No.
Okay, got it, sir. Those are my questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Rohin Bhairwani, Vijit Global Securities Private Limited. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, thank you for giving me the opportunity and congratulations on a great set of numbers for Q1 FY25. Just wanted to understand the reason for decline in revenue for operation and maintenance. Quarterly, there is a decline of around 50 to 70 crores.
Yes, hi, Rohit. So the reason, because in Q4 of FY24, where our revenue was a little over 500 crores on the O&M side, there were certain one-time billing on VAP and VAS sales, plus certain contract renewals that got delayed during the year, which was all booked at the time of Q4 before the financial year end. That caused a fillip or an increase in the Q4 revenue of OMS. Certainly, that is not a steady state revenue, so you should not annualize Q4 FY24 revenues as steady state. What you see in Q1 FY25 and also other similar quarters is what you would you should take as annualized revenues, other than any VAP, VAS sales that we do during the year.
Okay. And just wanted to understand the timeline between commissioning of a wind turbine and by when does the operation and maintenance of that coming into the business. Let's say you have done 274 megawatt in this quarter. So around by when can we expect the O&M of this to start coming?
So there's a difference. I'll just make a small correction. We've done deliveries of 274 megawatts in this quarter, but what is commissioned is 70 megawatts. So I will use 70 megawatts as a reference point. So let's say if 70 megawatts is got commissioned in Q1 of FY25, anywhere between 2 to 3 years is our warranty period that we give to our customers. So which means that Q1 FY27 or Q1 FY28 is when this 70 megawatts would start earning revenue from an O&M basis.
Okay. Thank you so much and all the best for your upcoming quarters.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Ashish Upangalwar, InvestQ. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes. So we've come a very long way in the last 1.5 years in terms of the entire turnaround of the business. Congrats on that. Sir, just to understand the addressable size that Suzlon can achieve, we have all the targets that the government has laid down for itself in terms of 10 gigawatts a year and private as it is going on. So for us, from here, where do we see the best case for us? Because execution on the ground remains different from government side plus the issues on the evacuation side. So just some idea on that will help us frame our thoughts on that.
Let's talk about sector, that would give you what Suzlon will do, because there's always a correlation between how much sector does and how much Suzlon. This year, we are expecting anywhere between 5 to 5.5 gigawatts is what country will do compared to 3,250 what we did last financial year. And our expectation is that this will in FY26 would go up to anywhere close to 6.5 to 7 gigawatts. And thereafter, from FY28 onwards, we expect it to be anywhere between 8 to 9 gigawatts. Why we are saying this, also the reason is that one is gradually we hope these hurdles on the ground will get removed because more and more capable people are coming in, and then there are some advanced actions being taken on the land. And also the government of India, as we mentioned last time, is now started acting on removing the hurdles for wind. In fact, just 2 weeks back, they issued the guidelines and revised guidelines and micro-siting, removing some of the hurdles. So if that is a rate, 5.5, then next year about 7, then following year about 8 to 9, is what is the opportunity, then you know, you can always think that what should be ours, where will we be from that point of it, rather than me saying that how much Suzlon will do. And we always know that what is the correlation between what country does and what Suzlon does.
Sure.
I will have to take that as a guidance rather than, you know, giving a guidance on the company's strength.
Correct. So what's the executable capacity now as we stand today, and just to understand how much we will have to do in case these numbers on the overall macro of India come in till FY28.
Come again?
So what's the current capacity in terms of how much we can deliver in case the demand side picks up, as you said, FY26-27? So what's the capacity right now?
Our supply today is, supply capacity is anywhere between 3.5 to 4 gigawatts. We can easily supply per year, which will get further expanded, let's say, in FY26 and FY27.
Okay, got it.
But then please understand, I keep each time clarifying this, when you talk about manufacturing capacity is provided your machines are constantly loaded. Okay?
Right.
Assuming that month to month, there is a load of that nature. It cannot happen that 4 gigawatts means that, you know, first quarter nothing happens and second quarter suddenly picks up, third quarter nothing happens. Then this gets constrained. Capacity, what is lost in a quarter, in a month is lost.
So, is 70% a better assumption to go with?
Sorry?
70% utilization would be a better assumption to go with, or given the seasonality issue?
My guess is with respect to the optics, and the particular projects which are scheduled for delivery in that quarter.
Got it. Yeah.
It could be 100%, and you know, it could be as low as 50 to 60%. It all depends. It would vary from quarter to quarter depending upon which projects are scheduled to be delivered during that quarter. Some projects are well prepared. Like for example, I said that if NTPC within that, let's say one, there's an advanced preparation by NTPC, so therefore it's much more predictable for supply of short turbines. This will keep changing. I'm not trying to dodge your question, but you know, it all depends upon quarter to quarter. We need to keep monitoring.
Yeah, I understand that. Yes. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Barani, Avendus Spark. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah. Good evening, sir. Am I audible?
Yeah, you are.
Yeah. So this guidance you've given for the year of 5.5 gigawatts of execution at the country level, does it include CNI or is it only grid connected?
Total. Total wind capacity connected to the grid.
So including CNI?
Yeah.
Okay.
Except for those, if at all there are any capacities which are not connected to the grid, they are behind the meter.
Understood. Okay. So this is the total potential. And the second question is on the auctioning or awarding of projects. So we know government wants to achieve about 50 gigawatt overall for the year and about 10 to 15 on wind. So where are we on that target in the first quarter? Meaning how much has been auctioned or awarded?
Bidding is huge. I think we lost count of bidding. In fact, there is a huge amount of bidding completed projects awarded where there are they are now chasing the bid one waiting for the PSS to be signed. they can move ahead. And even if you look at currently as we speak, just in the month of June, with different awards put together, there are about 3.7 gigawatts awarded projects just in 1 month of June. And today, there is about 7.5 gigawatts of the bids submitted and another 13 gigawatts of bids called for. Forgetting about the bids awarded and pending for execution, which is close to 20 gigawatts. Okay? And we already have another 4 gigawatts awarded in the month of June, another 20 gigawatts bids either submitted or called for. So I don't think that this is all in addition to the C&I. And in fact, if you look at our the order book, 2/3 is C&I and 1/3 is the bid PPS. So I don't think there is any concern with respect to whether the government is coming out bidding or whether there is enough volume. What as a country we need to only concentrate on is how much can we commission each year. So I don't think there is any issue with respect to the market availability or not. That is at least for the next few years, at least 2 to 3 years, we really don't need to worry about are there opportunities in the market. Sector as a whole, including Suzlon.
Okay, that's clear. My final question is clarificatory in nature. So you mentioned about 274 we delivered, but commissioned is around 70. So that means the revenue is recorded for the entire 270 while the cost is recorded only for the 70. Is that how to understand that?
No. So the revenue is recorded for the entire 274 and the COGS also is recorded for the 274 entirely. For the 70 megawatts commissioning, the correspondent revenue and costs are recorded. Whatever is not commissioned, we are yet to recognize costs or revenue associated with it.
And also, please be clear that this 274 and 70 has no linkage. It's not that the 70 megawatt is what is out of this 274.
Yeah.
The turbines can be could have been supplied even a couple of quarters back and commissioned now. So therefore, these two are independent of each other. On a quarter-to-quarter basis, we can't compare supply versus COD. So there's a time lag between supply and the commissioning.
Yeah, that is very clear. Thank you for answering and all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nikhil Abhyankar, ICICI Securities. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you.
Hello? We lost you.
Hello? Am I audible?
Yeah, now you're audible.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Thanks. So thank you and congrats on a good set of numbers, sir. So, sir, can you just elaborate on what exactly are these difficulties that we are facing in execution? And after that, I'll ask my follow-up on that.
No, it is not. When I talked about execution, it is nothing to do with Suzlon. I'm talking about the sector. The reason why we are not able to go up with 8 gigawatts, 9 gigawatts is fundamentally the two reasons we can say. One is the availability of land and the pathways, and more importantly, continuous availability of pathways. You might have taken a pathway to take your turbine and everything, but there could be, after you've taken it, then again there could be issues locally with people to do that. Because please understand that wind projects are scattered. They are in an open area. They are not in a closed area like what you do a solar or you do a fossil fuel based plant. So that's the major concern today everybody is facing in terms of the land, and also because most projects got concentrated in Karnataka today. So therefore, there is more pressure there, and also the regulations in Karnataka for land acquisition is very cumbersome process. That's one state which still has you need to convert into non-agricultural, because many other states have changed over saying that, okay, if it is renewable, it's automatic conversion. You don't need to do that. So therefore, the whole process itself is too long in Karnataka. On top of it, everybody is in Karnataka. So the whole state is stressed out for that. That's one reason. Second reason why we are seeing execution is in terms of connectivity is one reason where substations, there are timelines to come in sometimes. There's a delay, in the substation coming up by a few months, so therefore that gets delayed. Third is that the BOP capacity building is still happening in the country, because no other OEM does end-to-end except Suzlon. And even in our case, only 1/3 is EPC, the balance 2/3 is not EPC. That means we're not doing end-to-end. The third-party BOP capacity building is still happening. So therefore, they're seeing the delays in execution of BOP, not at the speed at which is expected. So these are the three major reasons why we are struggling for capacity addition. But as I said sometime back, there are different actions being taken in all these areas. Yes, gradually seeing. In fact, our opinion is that there is significant amount of capacity which is ready for commissioning even in the Q1, not just hours of 160 in total, which would come quickly onto the grid in Q2.
Right. And so, just a follow-up on that, so how does the payment cycle work for all these orders? Is the payment done after a certain credit period of the supply or after the installation of the turbines?
So there are various milestones that are defined in our agreement, right from advance at the time of execution to, you know, dispatch of various components of the turbine and, you know, the turbine components reaching upon site. So based on the various milestones defined in the agreement, we receive a chunk of the payment. I mean, I don't want to say the, you know, percentage in terms of payment that is received till turbine reaches site, but fair to assume that a large chunk of the payment is received by the company upon commissioning or erection of the turbine.
Also, please understand our supply contract is different from installation contract. These two are independent contracts. So in supply contract, you have independent payment terms, but there could be some payments linked to the commissioning. As and when commissioning happens, even if that is a separate contract. So supply contract runs independent of installation. That's a separate contract. And in fact, if you have a full EPC, there again, BOP contract is independent.
Understood.
And if you're doing land, land contract is independent. These all contracts are independent. They don't talk to each other in terms of LDs or anything. Payment terms, sir.
Okay. And sir, just a final question. A global peer is looking to sell its India business. So, will we be looking to acquire?
First part of it, are you looking at it? We are looking at it. It's like everybody looking, we are looking at it. Are we looking at it to acquire? I don't think so. Let's see that what happens.
Okay, if, sure.
There is no definitive answer of yes or no for that.
Understood, sir. Thank you and all the very best.
Thank you so much. The next question is from the line of Dhaval Doshi, Diamond Asia. Please go ahead, sir.
Congratulations, sir, on a good set of numbers. I'm sorry if I would have missed this point, but can you just touch upon what is the current pipeline looking at in terms of the bids that you've submitted? Secondly, what kind of inflow numbers do we expect to go through as far as this year is concerned? I know you won't give me an exact guidance on this, but some color in terms of how do you see things for this year?
No, first thing is we don't submit any bids. If you're talking about the government-run bids, we don't participate in that bidding. Those are the IPPs which run the bids, and then we IPPs come to us for equipment supply contract. Only bids we participate is the public sector for selecting equipment suppliers, they run a bid, like NTPC, which was the question previously. That's where earlier we were not participating because we were not able to meet the financial criteria. Now we meet that and we started participating in the bids for NTPC and other public sectors. That's the only bids we participate where there is a bid for equipment supply. Generally, private sector doesn't run a bid, they just invite you to discuss.
So, if I have to rephrase my question, what are the kind of tie-ups or that we could have for which either the IPP or Suzlon itself is under various bidding process, and we could expect some kind of an outcome?
Nobody does that. That arena has gone where people used to have a pre-bid tie-up in the initial stages of SECI 1, SECI 2, SECI 3, maybe up to 5, 6 people used to have pre-bid tie-up. But now every IPP is experienced, they know the pricing. So they will talk to you at the most for some budgetary quotes, but they take their own judgment on what would be the EPC price, the equipment price, and go ahead and bid. If they win the bid, then they'll come and talk to us saying that, you know, will you please supply and negotiate a contract. There is no pre-bid arrangement per se in anymore on this. It used to be there earlier. We did have many pre-bid things, but in the current system, it doesn't exist. So people bid on their own without any pre-bid tie-up.
Okay. Some sense on what could be the order inflow for the year and the time frame over which the existing order book needs to be executed?
What is going to come, obviously you will know whenever it comes and we keep announcing it. So therefore, you would see that there is a large, like Himanshu mentioned it in opening comments, there are a large pipeline which under discussion on the table, but till it is closed, contract signed and we receive confirmed advance, then obviously we don't take that as an order. So there is no point in talking about how much is under discussion. There is substantial amount which is under discussion.
No, so what I was referring to was the kind of order inflow that we are budgeting or we are targeting, some sense of numbers, some growth numbers, and the time frame over which the existing 3.8 gigawatt needs to be executed. Two separate
3.8 gigawatt. The 3.8 gigawatt is between this year and the next year, most of it. Some part of it would be early FY27.
Okay. And on the order inflow, so any targets that you would want to give or?
No. No guidance on that, please.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
But again, as I said, that just to reconfirm, orders need not be monitored currently. But there are enough orders, it's a question of how much we want to pick up. And that is the reason in the opening comments, we also mentioned that we are looking at orders where we think as a confirmed offtake would be there in that given definitive timeline. Our offtake will always be there. But is there a definitive timeline and what is the quality of that order? That's important for us now.
Okay. So can I squeeze in one more question if it's okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you mentioned the executable capacity that we have is close to 3.5 to 4 gigawatt, right? Was that number correct?
Manufacturing capacity.
Manufacturing capacity. And we're looking at expanding this probably in FY26.
Yes.
What would that capacity be, sir? The expansion?
We are looking at, obviously that would, again, you know, you will indirectly draw how much is we are targeting the orders. So therefore, let's leave it there. We are expanding it. So once the expansion is completed, we will let you know what capacity we are for FY26.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Doshi. The next question is from the line of Dhruv Muchhal, HDFC AMC. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you. So just one clarification, you mentioned that the developers no longer do pre-bid tie-ups. So does the assessment of what PLF they will generate, kind of wind profile, that's all independent by them, and then they select the equipment which they have to? Is that how it works?
See, they generally... See, what happens is that people are now, some of them are developing their own sites, okay, some IPPs. Obviously, they know what is the PLF likely to be there based on the wind data if they have it. There are one set of IPPs all alike. Second set of IPPs, they don't finalize with you, but they sit with you or maybe they sit with a couple of more suppliers and then ask a budgetary quote saying that, do you have a site, what would be the budgetary quote, but not finalize form of the order. So they will take some sort of a thing from the market test and then go ahead and do it.
Okay. Understood.
Because most of the people today are, you know, doing multiple projects. They've been in the sector. So therefore, experience for them is much different today.
Sure. And the second question was on the contribution margins. So probably a bit early, we have started delivering the new turbines. But do we still stick to our guidance? I think the numbers are relatively better than what we were guiding. So, but do we still stick to the guidance of, I think, 90 lakhs per megawatt? Is that does that remain, or do we see an upside to that number based on the run rate that we are achieving and based on the actual deliveries now?
So, you know, we're maintaining that, you know, our... average selling price is, you know, close to about, average is about 6 crores per megawatt. It, of course, differs quarter to quarter. And based on our margins, you know, which we've said is, you know, mid to late teens, you know, whether that's 90 lakhs or close to a crore would be the contribution margin. So, you know, if we sort of end up doing, of course, 20% margins on a ASP of about 6 crores, you know, that's about 1.2 crores. But, no, there may be a playoff where, you know, we may be a little shy of 6 crores, but we would have improved margins. So therefore, I don't want to comment on 90 lakhs or 1 crore or whatever that number is, but that's where we are.
Okay. So ideally, we should look at it on a percentage basis. Is that the right way to think of it, or should it be absolute, the way it works?
You should look at it as a percentage basis of our, you know, overall revenue.
Okay. Okay. And say, for example, if I look at the revenues right now for the quarter, if I just do a division by the deliveries, it's about 5.5 crores. I understand it will never be, the installations and deliveries will never be exact, but assuming the installations were also done all through, I mean, equally, what the realization number would have been? I'm just trying to understand, you mentioned the contribution margin would have been 20%, but what the realization would have been?
No, so as I said, 20% was just a math that I walked you through. I'm not saying that it would have been 20%.
Around that number, yeah.
Yeah, around that. So, and in terms of calculations, of course, if you see our average selling price over the quarters, it's been a little shy of 6 crores. So anywhere between 5.8 to 6 crores has been the average, which is what is about close to 5.5 crores in Q1 this year. So, of course, had the commissioning happened to a larger extent, you know, for the 160 shortfall, we would have got close to the 5.8 to 6 crore average.
Got it. And this last question is, what are the deliveries that we have done cumulatively? What are the installation spending for our deliveries? You mentioned that system has a lot of this gap, but how much is this for us?
Our turbines, including whatever the latest deliveries what we have done, it would be somewhere anywhere close to about 800 megawatts is what is pending for commissioning.
No, so about, yeah, close to 700 megawatts, so 720 megawatts to be precise, is what is pending uncommissioned cumulative out of all the deliveries.
Including the deliveries this quarter.
Yeah.
So 700 megawatts which have been delivered to the site but pending for just the grid connection and related.
No. We didn't say that. 700 is delivered. Some of them is still to be, this 273 which has gone, many of them may not even been erected. So there are different stages.
Okay.
What we talked about was only the 230 megawatts out of this which we erected and pre-commissioned all the things. Only 70 megawatt has been done. So in the 770, 160 megawatt is what you can actually count as the turbines which are ready for commissioning but could not be commissioned because of the constraints in the 720.
Got it. Makes sense. Got it. Thanks so much, Anand.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vivek Surekha, individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for this opportunity. Am I audible?
Yeah. Please go ahead.
Yeah. So, sir, just one question on the OMS side. Are there any plans to list this separately and capitalize on the current scenario?
No, there are no such plans.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Yash, Stallion Asset. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. So my question is that I think you've made 8% EBIT margins on your WTG segment this quarter. Do you think you have scope for improving the margins further, or this is a sustainable level?
So the difficult one to say, but yes, I mean, you know, we are seeing that the economies of scale and the volume play is playing out. So, you know, whatever historical margins that we've seen, thin margins that we've seen, is hopefully a thing of the past. So, you know, our sense is that, you know, these EBIT margins close to this region should be able to play out over the next few quarters.
Sure. And I just wanted to sort of confirm this again. So you're targeting 5 to 5.5 gigawatt order book this year. Is that what I heard, right? Sorry, I was just joined late in the call.
We said that country, as a country, we will be adding 5 to 5.5 gigawatts of wind capacity this year, as a country.
Okay. And you'll maintain your market share of over 30%, or is there a scope to increase that further?
If I say that, I'm giving you the guidance anyway. Let's hope so.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Yash. The next question is from the line of Neha Menon, NVS Brokerage Private Limited. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Good evening, sir. Congratulations on your performance. I just wanted to get some... Hello?
Yeah, please go ahead.
Yeah, just wanted to get some clarity again on, so regardless of the order book that we have each year, what is our annual installation target or you may say average installation capacity?
It's not an installation capacity which would vary on various factors outside on this. What we talk about is that what is our manufacturing capacity, means like what is our supply capacity. This is what we mentioned. Currently, we can supply anywhere between 3.5 to 4 gigawatts.
Okay.
And which would expand further.
Okay, sir. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Menon. The next question is from the line of Prateek Giri, Shublab Research. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi, am I audible?
Yeah, you are. Please go ahead.
Thank you. So congratulations on good set of numbers. I have one small query. Recently, we read about Niti Aayog, you know, trying to indigenize the wind energy equipments which are there. So I was just trying to understand currently in the entire bill of material, how much of that BOM is actually import dependent?
For us, it's not applicable because we are much above the number what they're talking about. Our import, our domestic component is much, much higher than what they're talking about. So this is basically meant for other players. That's a non-issue for Suzlon.
Understood, sir. Very helpful. Thank you, sir. That's it from my side.
Thank you, Mr. Giri. Before we take the next question, we would like to remind participants that you may press star and one to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Preet Nagarev, Wealth Finswa. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, hi. So the question, sir, I wanted to better understand is that you were saying there's a huge C&I pipeline and you mentioned something between 15 to 20 gigawatts of that pipeline. So can you tell me what is the driving factor this for which is leading to such a demand?
No, the 15 to 20 gigawatt, what I mentioned was the bids invited by the government agencies.
Okay.
So that is what is the number what I talked about. So obviously, if you look at on the wind capacity side, the currently we're at 46 gigawatts. So the requirement to meet on the least cost option, the demand projections for 2030, and in this first option is wind has to reach 100 gigawatts. So there is a 54 gigawatts of capacity addition has to happen in the 6-year period. So therefore, to meet that is what government is actually planning everything. Because if you want to meet by 2030 that much of it, most of it should be awarded, let's say, if that is FI30, so FI28, you know, you should complete all the awards. So I think our expectation is that awards would be completed even much before that. So, but then depending upon the execution, like last time we mentioned, if not 100, our expectation is we will reach somewhere 90-95 gigawatt definitely by 2030.
Okay. So but the CII component is also very strong. So what is driving the
CII component? The simple reason CII is raising is that most of these large industries want to move away from fossil fuel if they already have a fossil fuel captive capacity, or they are right now driving the grid into a captive capacity. People are switching over from fossil to renewables because one is a tariff arbitrage compared to the fossil, because you know that any one of them, if they have a coal-based capacity, that coal is very expensive for captive plants. They need to buy the coal in the auction. They don't get the linkage. So therefore, arbitrage is one, and number two is that if you need to export your product outside of India, so this is now becoming more and more restricted that the product has to be green. So mainly the tariff arbitrage, but otherwise also, you know, their own targets for carbon footprint. That's why C&A. In fact, if you see that not just here, everywhere it's happening. Even if you look at US, the largest capacities signed today are by people like Google, Meta, and you know, Amazon and type of people. So gigawatts and gigawatts of capacities of PPAs they're signing there to buy. So it's a global phenomenon where everybody is working on this. And the tariff arbitrage is really helping.
I see. And sir, how do you see the impact of pump storage or hydrogen projects or battery-enabled storage solutions? How does that help out for wind projects? If you can share with me.
See, the pump storage, it's nothing to do with the hydrogen. Hydrogen can also help, but also the what we are now moving is that the from individual solar and wind, so we move to the hybrid. And from the hybrid, now we are moving to the round-the-clock, what is called the firm and dispatchable renewable energy. That means the instead of the intermittent power supply, the renewable energy, if you want to compete and replace fossil fuel, should also be able to generate on demand the way the fossil fuel generates. So therefore, in the fossil fuel, what happens is that you give your capacity on a 15-minute basis and you respond to the demand on a 15-minute block basis. So now the similar thing is what the bidding is happening in fossil in renewables, where you need wind, you need solar, plus you need the storage. Current options for storage is could be either the battery or the pumped storage or could be any other way. But having said that, this because of this storage system, because we also need a stable power supply for hydrogen, it also helps the hydrogen sector. But it's more pumped storage or the storage is basically to make renewable into a not an intermittent power supplier, but supplier on demand 24/7.
I see, sir. So you feel that all these initiatives are basically an enabler for the wind sector as well?
Sorry? Come again?
Do you say that all these initiatives and technologies are also enabling the demand in the wind sector?
Yeah. See, today, if a load following FDRE bid, okay, when they say load following is that the your client, which is an utility company, or if it is a C&A company, can give you what is the load profile on a 15-minute block basis for 8760 hours in a year, and you're supposed to set up capacity. If your PPA is for 200 megawatts to supply,
okay,
to on this basis, like your wind capacity consent requirement would be anywhere between 2.1 to 2.4 times. So that's the extent of wind capacity what you need to meet to make the power on an FDRE basis. So if it is only the peak, not the load following type of FDRE bids, then it would be anywhere between 1.4 to 1.5 times. So today, what is happening, why wind has to grow is that the every single project, what is being executed or what is being bidded out, are a combined projects of wind, solar or wind, solar and storage. So therefore, the project can only get commissioned provided wind also gets commissioned because it's an integral part of a project. So therefore, today we reach a stage where how much wind capacity is commissioned would decide the total RE capacity getting commissioned. That's why wind is becoming critical. That's the reason you see more and more attention of government towards removing the bottleneck for wind sector.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, sir, for explaining and wishing you all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. The next question is from the line of Dipesh Kashyap from Invesco MS. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, hi team. Thanks for the opportunity. So I'm looking at slide 22. I just want to understand what causes this volatility in the contribution margins. Is it the mix of O&M and WTG?
Yes, Dipesh. So, as the share of business of the WTG goes up in the consolidated pie, the contribution margin on a consolidated basis will, of course, keep reducing because, as you know, the contribution margin in O&M is at almost about 65-66%, whereas in WTG for this quarter it has been about close to 23%. So in the overall revenue pie, the more the WTG business, the consolidated contribution margins would keep reducing.
Understood. And the fixed expenses that are below this, right, employee and other expenses, I see that other expenses are constant year on year. So how do you expect it then to grow? Like, will it be fair to take it like 10-15% increase year on year?
Yeah, I think that's a fair estimate, about 10% increase because, of course, correction in sort of operating costs plus certain employee cost. In addition to that, we are also incurring certain one-time operating expenses this year and, getting our systems and processes right by engaging various consultants. So that may attract some small CapEx and one-time P&L costs as well, which may look a little the fixed cost may look a little inflated for this year, but I think those are one-time costs for a long-term benefit of the organization. Although they may not move the needle significantly, but your assessment is correct. About 10% to 15% increase on the fixed cost is what you should assume.
Understood. And secondly, sir, your current EPC mix is around 33% odd, I think, if I remember it correctly. How do you expect it to grow with your order book that is in the pipeline?
Yeah, it's actually growing. We've been at around 23-24%. Now it has come to 33%. Our development, land development, what we talked about earlier, in advanced land development, as that keeps increasing, so that our EPC percentage should increase.
And so how should we think about the working capital then? Because I think the working capital days have been a little stickier. They have not been coming down. So as the EPC contribution increases, do you expect to worsen further, or how should we think about it?
These two are not related.
Whilst these two are not directly related, Dipesh, but working capital is something that we said we are working on constantly, and you may not see a significant improvement quarter over quarter, in one or two quarters, but directionally we are striving towards improving the working capital mix. As I've always maintained, we don't want to give a target and as to what the NWC will be and by when. But rest assured, we are working on optimizing the working capital mix for the company.
Got it, sir. Thank you, and all the best.
Thank you
so much, Mr. Kashyap. The next question is from the line of Manoj, individual investor. Please go ahead, sir.
Congratulations for the good set of numbers. Now, I have a couple of questions. One is regarding the exit of Siemens Gamesa. So how it impacts our market share? How much we can tentatively it might increase?
Sorry, so your voice is muffled, Manoj. Very difficult to hear you.
Okay, is it better now?
No, we cannot hear you.
Is it still?
Yeah, now it's better. Let's try one time.
Yeah, so the first question, regarding the exit of Siemens Gamesa in India. Okay. So how much market share, will it increase in case of Suzlon? And the other one is, regarding the offshore business, right? We have a government has announced a viable gap funding regarding that offshore business. So, can you throw some light on the offshore development project? How are we going to develop that in the future?
The Siemens Gamesa will not have any impact on our market share, because we were never under pressure, because them in the recent past about market share. So therefore, I don't think anything is going to happen because of their exit. As far as the turbine supplies are concerned, okay? I'm not talking about the service business. I'm only talking about the supply business. As far as offshore is concerned, yes, there is a 1,000 megawatt viability gap funding, but this is these projects bidding, and ultimately actual execution is 4 to 5 years away. So therefore, right now, for the immediate future of next 4 to 5 years, the offshore is not going to move the needle for so long.
So, but that's the future, right? I can assume, right?
Yeah. No, the future, it all depends. Like we explained earlier, the offshore in India is different from offshore outside India. In case of India, the generation gap between onshore to offshore is not significantly different compared to what is in Europe and other places. Generation gap not being very high means PLF not being much different, but the cost being very high. So therefore, cost of generation today, as we see today in the offshore, is very high, so anywhere between 7 to 8 rupees. So therefore, that sort of levels at this stage, I don't think you could actually go and sell the power unless there is a viability gap funding. And viability gap funding can come only for initial set of projects to encourage offshore to happen. So offshore to become a significant potential for us or for any player is still far away. So while we are prepared, we're not saying that we will not get prepared, and we're preparing because we do have an experience of offshore as part of when RE Power was part of us. In fact, they are including our current chief technology officer. Everybody is well experienced in offshore. We have prepared for that, but for a guidance purpose, I don't think it's going to change needle much in the near future.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Thank you so much for the information.
Thank you, Manoj. The next question is from Sumukha Jamandi, which will be the last question for the day. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, everyone. Thanks for the opportunity. I've been a long-term investor, retail investor for Suzlon. It's good to see the comeback from Suzlon from pre-COVID era to post-COVID era. Having said that, on a slightly negative tone, please excuse me if it's a repetitive question. Suzlon has been receiving a lot of penalty from the customs, etc. So what has been done in this regard to prevent this from happening? I understand they will be appealed in courts. And just a follow-up on that, has the appointment of the legal firm Kaitan been finalized? Thanks a lot.
So hi, let me take both the questions. So far as penalties are concerned, you know, of course, a lot of these relate to the past. You know, so at our end, we are now working internally to make sure that all our systems are automized and it's system-driven so that there is no room for any human error, and such penalties are at least minimized, if not totally eliminated. So that is the endeavor where we are working on is installing all the relevant softwares, ERP tools, and sophisticated tools that are available on whether it's GST, indirect, any indirect taxes for that matter.
Having said that, I just want to add is that it is not something suddenly increased.
Yeah.
What you're seeing is a new regulation where anything happens is supposed to inform the stock exchange. So therefore, that's why you're seeing this for every single company.
Yeah.
It is not something suddenly we started getting penalties.
Yeah.
Any company, for that matter of fact. It's a regulation today. If you get a notice, you need to inform.
So, of course, that is one. On the Kaitan, you know, the Kaitan was appointed. And as we informed the stock exchanges at the end of our board meeting, the report was presented by Kaitan to our board, and they have found no non-compliances whatsoever in the company. There are certain suggestions that Kaitan has made for, you know, recommendations, I would say, for improvement and best practices adoption, which the company shall consider for implementation in a phased manner over the next few quarters. But the report has been absolutely clear. Without any red flags or any non-compliances being reported in the report. And the same has been presented to the audit committee and board 2 days back. And
yes,
the same has also been disclosed by us to the exchanges.
Thanks a lot. Does that include grievances from the independent director as well, if I may ask, please?
Just specific to that only.
Ah, okay. Sure. Yeah, that's all from me. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, I would now like to hand the conference over to the management for the closing comments.
Thanks everyone for joining this, and we would continue to keep interacting with you, and even post this conference, if there are any further questions, any further information required, my colleagues from IR are always available, and we are also always available for any specific information you people need. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of ICICI Securities, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.